This episode of the Builder Sessions is brought to you by Grind Coffee Co.
Hey guys, this is Bogey. You might know me from All Girls Garage on Motor Trend, and I am hanging out on the Builder Session. So give it a listen.
Welcome to the Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders.
We get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool. I'm Hoff.
And I'm Rosie, and on this episode, we chat with Bogey from All Girls Garage on Motor Trend. We cover a lot of ground, from the VW Beetle that sparked her passion for the automotive industry, to her empowerment of women in the trades through her all-female builds and instructional courses. She's just such a badass, and we're super excited to have her on the show.
Please enjoy our interview with Bogey.
Bogey, welcome to the Builder Sessions.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
This is awesome. I'm really excited to talk to you. I've seen you on TV a lot, and okay. I've always wondered what your story was, like how you got to. I wonder that about everybody. That's why we started this show.
Right.
You know what I mean? But in particular, though, just watching.
You wanted to know what I was like in real life.
Yeah, totally. Just what is, that's all that niceness on TV. That's
right.
That's BS, isn't it?
I'm an awful human being.
aren't we all? Yeah. So
I hope not.
For any of our listeners who aren't familiar with you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Bogey. By trade, I'm a master mechanic. I've been an automotive technician for 25 years, showing my age here a little bit. ASE master certified. I was BMW master certified. I left working at the dealership and started my own general repair shop, which was predominantly female focused.
Awesome.
So I've been a shop owner, but now I kind of work in the space of, I do a little bit of television. So you know me through All Girls Garage, mm-hmm. Which has been on Motor Trend for the last 12 years.
That's so cool, crazy. By the way. Yeah.
So crazy that it's been going on so long. I feel like I blinked and like, here we are 12 years later. But I also do a lot of like coaching and speaking and teaching, within the automotive space. Like I work with shop owners to help them create better cultures within their shop, and work with all sorts of different areas of the industry. Mostly my whole like thing that drives me is, you know, when I came up in the industry, I was one of very few women and not very welcome where I started out. And so everything that I do is motivated by a desire to see the number of women in the field increase and to see a culture and an environment that actually supports them. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what drives me in all of the different areas, whether it's teaching and speaking or coaching and mentoring or the all-female builds that I do at my shop here in Phoenix. Like I've got all of these different things. But yeah, the short nutshell is a host of a TV show, host of a podcast, auto mechanic and shop owner.
Wow.
There
Busy.
You go.
That just fills your day, doesn't it? With all those
no kidding
titles.
Just a little bit.
Well, thank
just
you for penciling in some time for us. For
Absolutely.
Us, for
I mean, it only took us
up
like,
here.
What, like 5 months to nail down a date?
Oh, that's okay.
That's we appreciate
so
it.
I'm so sorry.
No, don't apologize. No. Thank you for being here. I'm super excited to learn more about you. And so let's dive into that. So,
sure.
Little Bogey, grade 7, 8, 9, trying to figure out what they're gonna do after high school. Then you get into high school. Like, what? How'd you get an interest? Was it like a shop teacher? Or was it, you know, working at home with dad or an uncle or another female that really inspired you?
Yeah, it could have been mom,
mom.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was not mom.
I was getting there.
No, it was not mom. It was not mom. It was not dad either. My parents do not know where I came from. I honestly, when I was young, this is not what I anticipated my life was going to look like. If you had told me that I was going to become an auto mechanic when I was in seventh, eighth grade, I would have like looked at you like you had 14 heads. Like I had zero interest in cars. I wasn't into mechanical things. I didn't grow up around it. Nobody I knew in my life was into it. It like just wasn't anything that I was exposed to really. Mm-hmm. But I was a little hippie chick. And I loved Volkswagen Bugs because they're the cars that little hippie chicks
like. Of course, yeah.
And so I decided I wanted one. And what started this whole thing, honestly, is like a couple of things. One, I would go to shops. Once I got my bug, I would go to shops and I hated the way I felt like I was being treated as not just a girl, but a young girl and as one who didn't know anything. But more importantly, before I even got the car, I started reading Hot VWs and VW Trends magazine. I don't know if you guys might be too young.
No, VW Trends. Hot VWs are they still and cool around? Something, right?
Well, there's two magazines, VW Trends and Hot VWs. And and this was the mid-90s. And so the only time women showed up in these magazines was when they were wearing high heels and bikinis and strategically placed grease marks. And I was
they're
a
working
little
on
like,
a car. Ooh,
yeah, holding the wrong tool. Hashtag girls holding tools wrong. There's a website called that, by the way. Did you know that?
Really?
There is a website called Girls Holding Tools Wrong. And it is literally just picture after picture of some like, you know, somebody, whoever's doing the photograph doesn't know. So they're like, here, hold this impact wrench up to this headlight.
And they're like, okay.
What? It's horrible. Anyway, I digress.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
Side note, I have squirrel brain.
Hey, so do I. So we're good to go.
You're going to have to reel me in. So I took that as like a personal affront. I was like, this is BS. How come there's no girls in this? I want to know why. And so I decided that once I got my bug, that not only was I going to own this bug, but I was going to restore it myself. And I enrolled in high school auto shop knowing nothing. And everybody tried to convince me not to do it.
No way.
And that made me want to do it more.
Oh, good for you, though, for sticking. Like, that's who I am. BS. I'm sorry that was your experience, that everyone tried to convince you not to do it.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, my parents were supportive, although they didn't necessarily understand it. I mean, they thought it was just kind of like a fun hobby thing. My friend, like, I'll be honest, I didn't even know in my early years of high school that we had an auto shop program. Like, it wasn't something that was talked about. I jokingly call them the basement classes. you laugh because it's true, right? It's they were in like down the dark basement.
We live
somewhere
in the caves.
Yeah, right. Yeah, where they like
his shelf is all the way down this like dark hallway to the right. Yeah. It's exactly what it is.
It's ridiculous, and that offended me too because I was a smart kid. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, everybody wanted me to go to college. I wanted to go to college. But, you know, especially then, it's still happening now, but especially then, it was like, if you're smart, you go to a four-year college.
Yep.
If you're a troublemaker or you're not smart or you're not cutting it or you know, don't do well sitting in class or whatever it is, right? We send you to the basement classes.
And
go to the trades.
And that's right, exactly, which is such BS. It pissed me off. My guidance counselor told me that, you know, I was only the second girl to ever take auto shop in my high school's history.
Wow.
The first one was only like 3 years prior. And then the other thing was, you're smart. You can go to college. Why would you want to do this?
Yeah.
I like a challenge. When people say I can't, it makes me want to do it more.
That's awesome.
What did you want to do before, like when you were in grade 10, 11, before you took shop class? Did you have like, what did you want to do for a career? What was your thought process on that?
So I had a few thoughts. At one point in time, I wanted to be a dancer because I did ballet and modern and that kind of stuff, like since I was a small child. But I stopped growing. I was too short for that. So I can't do that. And then I thought for a little while, I wanted to go into psychology. My mom was a psychologist.
Oh, awesome.
She worked with early childhood development. Mm-hmm. Kind of stuff. Yep. So I was interested in that, but ultimately, and I wound up going to college. So after high school, I went to a 4-year college and I got a pre-law degree because I planned on going to law school.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
I was, I was always really into the women's empowerment space and women's rights. And I kind of thought that I was going to fight that battle on the legal front as a lawyer. But then after college, I realized that I did not want to do that and that I really missed working with my hands. That I'd fallen in love with working on cars in high school and I didn't realize it. Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, I enjoyed it. It was fun. But then I went off to college because that's what I was supposed to do. And I was on a good path and I liked what I was doing. It's not that I didn't like it, but I realized I was missing that satisfaction that you can only get from doing work in the trades, mm-hmm. which is like taking something with your own two hands and making it work or making it into something else, like taking sheet metal and turning it into a fender or taking a broken car and making it run. Like, there's nothing like that satisfaction. And I missed it. So I went back.
That's cool.
There's something to be said about building things with your hands. You know, like, we're very grateful. We were just talking before the recording here about like how the job is. And it's so cool to be able to hopefully inspire. And sometimes, and your story almost is a testament to that. You might not go into something right after high school. You might, you know, go try something else out. And then, you know what? No, I don't know. Some people are good with hands-on. Some people don't like it. You might be able to come around, but even for both of us, when we start building our own stuff, whether it's at home or in the shop or just, you know, helping students out, that hands-on learning, I cannot sit and read a book or listen to a professor lecture. Yeah. Like, I just go squirrel brain. So that there's some sort of gratification about building and making, you know, tinkering with your hands and solving problems.
Yeah, no, there absolutely is. There's nothing like it. And I think it's just really unfortunate that we have, you know, in our mind, our like the society's mind, right? Mm-hmm. This idea of gendered trades, because mm-hmm. I think there's so much similarity. Like, I get the same sense of satisfaction building something out of sheet metal as I do crocheting a blanket, because I'm also like secretly an 80-year-old woman and I crochet in my free time. But it's that same satisfaction. Like, I took a ball of yarn and I made it into fabric. I took, you know, like people who sew or craft, like upholsterers and all of like, but yet we have this idea that like making things with your hands in this arena is okay for girls, but making things with your hands in this arena is not. And it's really unfortunate because there's so much crossover. Oh. And I think there'd be so many people who'd be so amazing at it.
Oh, absolutely.
Given the chance to explore it.
That was my, I worked 1 year with Hoff here at his school, and I taught automotive and auto body. And then I moved over to the school where I'm at now and teaching welding and fabrication.
Nice.
And every single time, the girls that want to be in that class, because if they don't, they don't care, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Whatever. But the girls that want to be there, I'd go so far as to say 10 times out of 10, they're a better welder, they're a better painter, they're a better body person, like they're better at doing body work.
The attention
and finding,
to detail.
Finding
and precision.
Dents, and because the boys are just like, it's good enough, whatever. But they're like, no, I need to get this right. And their attention to detail is like crazy. And it's the coolest.
It's an interesting thing. It's funny you bring that up because that was a big topic of conversation. As telling before we started talking online, that like I was just at this teacher conference for ASE, and it was one of the topics of conversation because I heard that a lot, and I hear that a lot, like, oh, women actually make better ... And two things. One, I don't necessarily think that's the case. I don't think we make better mechanics or better painters or better welders. I think, like you said it, the ones that want to be there, like, most of us had to fight to be there, whether it was family or friends or guidance counselors or peers, whatever it was, like we had to fight to be there. And so we tend to want it that much more.
Oh, it's a good point. I like that. Yeah, that's a good point.
Whereas like, you know, like you said, we've been saying like guidance counselors will like just put the troubled kids in trades class, which
it can be a dumping ground.
Right?
Yeah.
It can be a dumping ground. So not all of them are choosing to be there, but the women who are there actively chose to, generally speaking. But it's an interesting thing too, because I was teaching teachers at this ASE conference about how to create a culture within your shop environment that is more welcoming and accepting of women. And one of the things that I told them that they didn't like hearing, was don't tell your female students that. Because you can think it, but don't say especially not in front of the boys, that you think the girls actually make better XYZs, because we tend to be really hard on ourselves. And that's what pushes us to be better. And we feel like all the eyes are on us, and we feel like everybody's waiting for us to screw up, and we feel like we can't mess up. And so we tend to be better, quote unquote, because we're pushing ourselves that much harder. And then when the teacher is like, watch out, boys, because I've heard this, like, I've actually heard this from teachers. Watch out, guys. There's a girl in the class. She's going to take your job one day.
Yeah.
Like, oh, great. Now yeah, I have this standard that I have to live up to. And what if I'm not that good? And now the boys are really looking at me with a target on my back. And yeah. So don't tell them that. Okay. That's all.
That's a really interesting topic. How do you create a culture that, whether it's in an automotive shop, a classroom, that empowers and is, you know, positive environment for females to, you know, to let them get comfortable so that they can grow and master these skill sets?
I mean, I think it's no different than creating a comfortable environment for anybody. Because at the end of the day, we all want to be respected. We all want to be in a safe place. We all want to have the proper tools. We all want to have clean bathrooms. We all want to not be called names. Like, so those things are universal across the board. I think in, especially in high school level and young people, it takes some additional just awareness when it comes to women, like knowing that girls' self-confidence drops in high school. And so making sure that you're not making a big deal out of it, but pairing them with the right people for group projects, that you're not putting them in a group of like 10 and then they're falling to the back and just not getting hands-on.
Getting
or the guys are taking tools from them and taking over, right? So that's a big thing. But I think the biggest thing is like not making a big deal out of it one way or another. Like one of the teachers this weekend was like, so it's not okay to like ask the girl in the beginning of class if she's sure she wants to do this. I'm like, it's not okay.
No way.
Singling them out. Probably making them uncomfortable.
Don't single us out either for the good or the bad, right? Because it happens both ways. It's either singling us out like, all right, guys, watch, you gotta go watch your language because there's a little lady in the class now. Or it's the opposite and it's, she's going to be better than you guys, just watch. And so either of those is a really uncomfortable situation for especially a high school aged girl who's probably, you know, already lacking in self-confidence.
Yeah. I've seen some pretty cool interactions. So I've had a couple really good welders come through, women welders that have gone on to the trade. And it's really cool to see because, like you said, you just kind of let it happen. And pretty soon people know. And she's just sitting there like knocking this out of the park. And then the other guys come in. And these are some girls that have never touched a welder before.
Sure.
And they're like obviously they're laying down considerably better welds than like this couple kids that have been in there, a couple boys that have been in there. Like that's their second time in there. But I don't know. They were celebrating her.
That's awesome.
But like organically, right?
That's beautiful.
They were like, oh man, you know, Rosen, did you see this? Come over here. And they're like, you're doing awesome. And they're really uplifting. And it was like really organic though. It wasn't like spotlight. Everyone, look at this. Look at this alien to the, you know, it's like. Brutal.
I think that's probably in the shop culture that you've set up though.
Yeah.
Right? I was just going to say, it sounds like you're doing a great job already creating that environment. And I think that's the big thing is like, we are doing a better job as a society and the trades of attracting more women into the trades. We're seeing up to 10% enrollment in schools across the country. The problem is we're still only seeing 2% women working in the field. Mm. And it's because we're losing people after about 3 or 4 years. And I think it's because of the culture of the trades, of the industries. And so part of the burden, I guess, that is on you guys as teachers.
Of course,
is that not only are you trying to create a space within your shop that is welcoming to all people, but that you're raising the next generation of our industry and you're helping shape how they're going to respond to women when they meet them on the workforce, mm-hmm. and whether we're going to be able to retain women in the future. Because we can do all we want to attract women to the industry, but if there isn't space for us, mm-hmm. then we're not going to survive. So it's just as important that the boys are being raised to teamwork, to respect one another, to not do the pranks that are that our industry is so notorious for, the games and the hazing and the pranks and the crude and the, all the rest of it. Like, I can hang with the best of them, mm-hmm. but is it really serving us? Is it really creating the kind of culture and the kind of respect that our industries deserve? Mm-hmm. And then we wonder why society doesn't respect us.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we don't necessarily always put our best foot forwards, do we?
Yeah.
You know?
No, totally. I've thought about that before, not in a gender specific context, but just about
it's
like,
universal.
Yeah. But yeah, like the old parts guy or the old mechanic, like washing his hands in the parts washer, like, don't be a wimp, boy. Like,
right. Yeah,
hands.
Totally.
Like, that's change. Let's change that too. But I've never thought about it. Like you're talking about it, I'm gonna consider that, you know, how I set up this year and really try
it's
to
all
be more
of the
intentional
above.
About that.
It's all of the above. We will attract more women, but we will also have more parents who are happy to have their kids go into this field.
Yeah.
And we will be able to charge what we deserve and be paid what we deserve and get the respect that we deserve if we act more professionally.
Yeah. We have to get rid of that stigma. Stigma, right?
Yeah.
Like I remember in high school, my guidance counselor, it's so funny because your guidance counselor is like, no, you're smarter than that. You shouldn't do it. My guidance counselor was like, have you ever thought of being a mechanic?
Let's look at your grades. Yeah. You're automotive.
You're done. Yeah. He's like, you should be a mechanic. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. You know, it's so funny how like everyone gets a different, but it's been a dumping ground for a while. And I'm really, well, up here, like in Alberta, they're really trying to, the government's promoting the trades and really trying, even within my school, really trying to get rid of that stigma that like, well, first of all, not everyone goes to university. And we're joking ourselves if we think every kid that graduates from our high schools are going to university, because that's not happening.
Yeah.
It's what is it, like 30% or something, like max? Right. And then the rest of it is either trades or going into full-time employment somewhere.
But you can still be super intelligent and go into the trades. In fact, the trades need smart individuals.
You have to.
Right?
Thank you. Amen to that.
I have mechanics. My welding math. It's like, guys, this math, like look at all the math. I just finished my first year welding. And so I'm apprenticing to get my journeyman.
Nice.
And I was like, there's four thick booklets of math. I'm like, you don't think you need this math? Check it out.
100%. And like mechanics today are working on rocket ships with wheels, right? Like they have so much going on and there's so much to them. And like the other thing that I think about too is like it's not just that not everybody needs to go or could go to college. It's like we need tradespeople to make the world go round. Like we are in a world of hurt as a world when we don't have people to fix the things that get you to work, that get the food farmed, that get the food from the farm to the grocery store, that like make the things and do the stuff. Like we need people who work with their hands, and the world's going to come to a screeching halt when we don't have enough of those people. There was, I tell this story occasionally. I was in New York for 9/11. And I was living in Arizona at the time, but I grew up in New York and I had flown home to do an interview at a Porsche dealership, which I didn't get, by the way. But I was scheduled to have my interview the day that 9/11 happened. And so I was home in New York for like the week following. And there was this really interesting thing that happened in the week following 9/11, which was there was like, for a moment, there was this respect and appreciation for tradespeople. Because all of these white collar folks were saying like, I can't help. I can't contribute anything. I'm not a first responder. I'm not a paramedic. I am not in construction. I'm not a welder. I can't help. And they suddenly had this moment of appreciation and gratitude for the folks who build, fix, and make things. And it didn't last, but it was really beautiful.
Wow.
While it was there, it was like the silver lining in 9/11 was this moment of gratitude for people who work with their hands.
Wow. Wow. What an incredible. Thank you for sharing that. That's really powerful.
Got deep. I apologize.
No, that's really cool. Like, oh, why didn't it last? That's what we have to figure out.
Because we're all squirrel brains as human beings. Yeah. And we fall back into stereotypes and old habits. And when we don't have a strong emotional impetus, like thing causing us to change our thinking, we fall back into our.
Yep. That's true.
I mean, we've had stigmas for decades on trades and different things. It's hard to get out of that rut. I think we're doing a much better job, but it's going to take, I think, quite a few years, if not decades, to get out. Right? It's something that you can't just pull out of and everybody's on the ingredients of, okay, no trades are good. This is good.
Yeah.
Like you got to put the work in. And I think, I don't know how you do that.
Well, you know, I think things are changing. They've not changed, but they are changing. And I think it happens generationally. We tend to be really impatient with change. We want it to happen now. But the reality is that the negative image that people have of the trades comes from two places. One, it comes from the outside, my lights just turned on in my office. That was weird. I have a motion sensor.
Don't worry about it. It's just audio. We'll just record the audio.
That's magic.
Wow.
That's amazing. So twofold issue with the trades is we have the stigma from the outside, how people perceive us. But then we have people within the trades who are perpetuating that negative perception, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to do two things. We have to change from the inside. And then we have to wait for people to see that difference and take notice and start thinking differently. So there's a visibility thing that needs to change, is how we present to the world so that people see us differently. And then the need has to happen, right? Society has to feel the need and feel the pain. But it's interesting because I feel like when I talk to young people, it is so different than when I talk to older people in their perception of the trades, in what they are looking for in a job, in what they're willing to tolerate. Like, you talk to older guys and they're like, you just got to have a thicker skin. The shop is a rough environment.
Yeah,
and
suck it up.
Suck it up, buttercup. But I hear younger guys being like, but does it have to be like that? Or can we make it not such a rough environment, maybe? And same as like, as a woman, if I tell a 10-year-old boy that I'm a mechanic, he's like, okay.
Yeah.
I tell a 50-year-old that I'm a mechanic, he's like, let me see your hands.
Yeah. Oh no.
So it's just generational. I think we're just gonna have to wait and see. Like, things are changing generationally.
And I think as a society right now, we're almost in a replace stage where if something breaks, instead of fixing it, whether it's on vehicles, you know, in a house, construction, whatever. Now, instead of diagnosing and problem solving and fixing it or trying to, it's just I'm going to order this part, or I'm going to take it here, and they're going to fix it. And they're maybe I think we see this in the schools sometimes the parents, and depending how you're raised and what your story or journey is, lots of people don't have that mentor or family member who kind of, you know, takes you under their wing and gets you under the car at 7 and involved. So if you don't have that, how do you,
do you get exposed to it?
How do you know how to fix something if it breaks?
Don't tinker anymore. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of a lost, it's almost like a lost art.
Well, especially if they're like city kids, right? Like, if you grow up rural areas, I think there's still quite a bit of like growing up with like fixing the farm equipment. You just you have to.
Yeah.
But city, again, I was a city kid. I grew up right outside of New York City. Like, there was no, it just wasn't something I was exposed to.
Yeah.
And I think we do our kids a disservice by not exposing them to all of these different things. Cause like, I never would have known, like, if I didn't love Volkswagen Bugs, I never would have taken shop class. I never would have pursued this life path. And like, just my life would be so completely different. Like, thanks, Volkswagen Bugs. But like, you know, it's crazy to me how many women and kids in general, boys or girls, you know, are missing out on something that they could be amazing at, that they could be immensely satisfied doing, that they could live a great life doing, all because like, they just didn't know that that was a thing.
Totally. I see that every day in school, even with my fellow colleagues. You know, there'll be some colleague. There's one incident where, not incident, but one thing happened where I was talking and kind of the stigma, you know, of, well, with the clientele you have in there, it must be pretty tough. I was like, actually, I have a couple clientele in there that they are with me in the morning and they're taking calculus in the afternoon.
Really?
I'm like, hell yeah, buddy. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Can I study for calc? Can I just stay out of the shop today? I got a calc test this afternoon. Absolutely.
You're the hardest worker
in the room. Just do it. Yeah.
Or on the other end of the spectrum, you have students that struggle in core classes and, right. You know, they're skipping their, you know, teachers can't stand them and they thrive in the shop because it's hands-on, they're comfortable.
Totally.
So you get both ends of that spectrum and it's pretty cool to see. I like more of the ones where the other teachers or colleagues do not like them. They're not performing. Oh, they can't do it. That. And then, you know, sometimes it takes a lot of work and sometimes could be a couple of years, but then it flips and you're like, oh, now you've almost got like we do lots of work experience at the school in my shop. And I take on some kids and some of those, not troubled kids, but kids that were, you know, not into the core classes.
And non-academic.
Non-academic, you get them in a couple
years. And sometimes
years.
Troubled for other reasons as well.
Well, exactly.
Challenging lots home of, life and,
And next you thing you know, they're doing demos. They're, you know, oh, somebody needs a hand. Oh, go show this person how
to. They're thriving.
Oh, yeah. And teachers are like, what? What is this person doing in your class? Well, you know,
they're actually doing really well.
But also, it's a huge, it's relationship.
Yes.
Whatever background you come from, whatever gender you are, whatever it is, we all have that human element and it's all about that relationship piece. I remember when we used to work together, we worked together pretty close and we had this pancake breakfast in the shop one day.
For Christmas.
For Christmas break. Right before Christmas break. And we had all of our students. He had wood shop the same time as I had automotive. And so we had all of our classes both of our classes come together to prep this. And then we invited the whole school to come into the shop and to eat these pancakes that we made. And
we had a TV on a rolling stand with a Christmas movie and music.
I love it.
It was sweet. Yeah, we had lights on the hoists and stuff. It was great.
Fun.
Christmas tree. And then, so then we invited all the other classes by, you know, English and social and math. And there are these two guys with a reputation. And they're like, everyone like hated these kids. And it was one of the coolest moments. It was my first year of teaching. This is still one of the coolest moments of my career, where we were sitting down and they were sitting beside us talking and just shooting the bull, just hanging out. And then they'd get up and help someone, whatever, flip some pancakes, whatever, come sit back down, just hanging out. Yeah. And then this one teacher comes up to both of us. She's like, how did you get them to do that? I can't even get them to come to class. Yeah. How'd you... They're helping people. And we're like,
right.
I don't know.
I love it. That is so beautiful. And it's so like, that illustrates everything that I was like trying to teach at this conference, right? It's like, how do you create an environment that is accepting of women? The same way you create an environment that is accepting of anybody, which is called treating people like human beings.
100%.
Like treating people with respect. And like you were treating those kids with respect, no matter who they were, where they came from, you treated them with respect and you met them at your level and you communicated with them. And like that at the end of the day is like, that's all it takes.
Yeah.
Like just be good to people, genuinely care about people and be good to them and respect them. And I think I have a friend who says this, he's also an instructor, he's a motorcycle instructor. And he says that it's not finding out how smart they are. It's finding out how are they smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that phrase because everybody is smart
in
their own way. And if we expect people to all be the same, we're going to be horribly disappointed all the time.
Oh,
but if we're willing to discover their uniqueness, then that's beautiful. Like,
and
we'll
I don't know where
it.
The disconnect is. Like, what happens between high school where we're all taught, you know, treat everyone with respect, the golden rule, all that stuff in school. And like the business world, let's say, or any sort of job, right? We both have our management degrees, and business 101 is if you treat your employees properly and well,
company
they'll work
culture.
Hard for you, and they'll make you lots of money.
Right.
Not for money's sake, but because.
So what happens?
So what happens? Why is there such a disconnect?
I mean, we could pontificate on this for hours.
Yeah, grab a beer and we'll.
I know, right? I think there's a couple of things. If I'm gonna conjecture, I think One is, I mean, obviously there's just human nature. There's greed, there's whatever. I think there's also this, like, we get indoctrinated with whatever culture we go into. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for example, I started working in the field at a shop that was like every bad stereotype you can imagine. And in that shop, I learned that the only way that I could be accepted was if I was like one of them. And to be one of them, I had to learn that anger was the only acceptable emotion, that I had to curse a lot, and that I had to be really crude. So I learned the behavior of that culture, because at the time I wasn't strong enough or confident enough to stand up to it and stay me. So I got indoctrinated into that culture. So the culture winds up perpetuating itself because new people come in and they get taught the ways, and the ways aren't always good ways. But then I think the biggest piece is that 90% of us think that we're doing a great job, right? Like, I can talk to like every boss out there and they will think, I'm a great leader. I do a great job with my employees. They know that they have an open door and they can talk to me. Like, we all think we're doing good. But when you speak to the employees, they're like, he's the biggest a-hole on the planet. He treats us like shit, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I do this thing in one of my classes where I ask the shop owners or the people in the shop if they had to describe their shop as a person.
Oh, cool.
If their business was a human being, how would you describe this person? You get all sorts of interesting descriptions. It tells you a lot about it. But this one guy tells me, oh, my shop would be like that sweet old man down the street. He's friendly and he just loves everybody. And he always wants to just sit down and have a cup of coffee with you. And he just, you know, likes to tell stories. And I'm like, okay, that's a beautiful description. I love it. His service manager came up to me after class and said, that was the funniest ish I have ever heard.
Yeah, yeah.
If I had to describe our shop, I would describe it as a grumpy, miserable old man.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. So like, we think we're doing good,
but
we're not always. And it's a lot of times it's those subtle things, like that guy who asked me in the class. So it's not okay to single the girl out and ask her if she really wants to do this or why she wants to do this. Like, he genuinely was like, but so that's not okay. Like, I thought that I was being encouraging because I just wanted to make sure she really wanted it. And I'll support her, but I just wanted to make sure. And I'm like, you think you're doing good, but you're not.
Yeah, that's fair. Hey, ignorance is bliss, right?
So yeah. I don't know. But yeah, we could pontificate on that for hours because the world is a crazy place and human beings are funny animals.
Totally.
I think where we have an advantage with the relationships is that we have more time. Doesn't happen with every student, but I feel like there's more time for one-on-one or small group, you know, with say math, for instance. Everything is okay. Chapter one, test, you know, there's not a lot of time to really get to know somebody. Whereas, you know, we still have our content and curriculum, but it's more hands-on and, you know, more, is it
not conversational?
Conversational.
Less superficial.
It's easier.
Yeah.
You can have an authentic conversation and it's not just, oh, hey, how's it going? How's your weekend? Okay, good. Oh, we got to do chapter two, blah, 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 or writing essays or whatever. So I feel like it doesn't happen with all students because some are, you know, a bit quieter and depending on what you're doing, but.
No, that's a really good point. I think you're definitely right. There's a lot more opportunity there.
Yeah.
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 And it's interesting to think about how, like, if you get to a point with these kids, like, we have this opportunity. We're blessed with the opportunity to get to know them, like you said, on a different level. And because of that, you can potentially change the trajectory of a kid's life.
Oh, totally.
Because, like, hey, you should really, that's happened a couple times in my class. And I'm not bragging. It's just a feather in my cap. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
Like, there were a couple times where I'm like, hey, buddy, like, this is really good.
Yeah.
You should think about doing this. And then there's been four or five kids that have gone on and they've never done it before the class. And then there they go. They found a purpose. So they found, you know, it's really cool.
Totally. And realistically, there's probably more than that who you just won't know about because they never came back and told you. But like, you probably know this from doing your podcast. I do a podcast as well every Wednesday, and I've interviewed like 150 some odd women now in various trades. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard either of the extremes, right? One, my shop teacher is the reason why I'm still alive, why I have my career, why I do so well, like all, like the whole gamut. Or my shop teacher is what broke me and destroyed me. So like there's a, there's a ton of, cause that age is so like, so important and so vital. And a teacher makes such a world of difference. And I think shop teachers particularly have opportunity because to your point, you have that time for communication a little bit more.
There's a weird, there's
to
a
change
weird,
people's
like,
lives.
There's like a really weird, like, I don't want to say power because it's not like, you know, having power over someone, but there's like a powerful like dynamic that can develop there between you and your class in a shop.
That's probably, it's really cool. Shop culture.
Yeah.
Right. Whether, and you probably don't even see it happening. It always, there's a bunch of teachers that do different things and this is what I do specifically for shop culture. And then kind of like reflect and, oh, well, I need to increase. And they're like, well, you're doing this and this. And like they come in and watch or, you know, chat or something and you've already set this up and
you're just doing it.
It takes time and, you know, different. Yeah. I don't know. You're always reflecting and trying to make it better. And sometimes I feel personally for myself is that I feel like my culture could be better and this, but then when people come in, they're like, hey,
right.
You've got this. These are the systems and the processes that you put in place. Yeah. So you kind of,
and it's just second nature to you. You're just like, it's a regular
day. I'm not doing it, but you actually kind of are behind the scenes, I guess.
Yeah. You're too close to, you're too close to see the forest for the trees you're in it, but that's a beautiful thing. Like, and like it, but it's also like that desire to always be better is what's going to continue to grow you and push you to be the best always, like to keep pushing yourself and like to have that impact with students. And God, like, I don't envy you guys. Like being a teacher is one of the most thankless jobs. Like most of the time you will not know the impact that you had on people, but like know that you are, like, just from the stories that I hear, like good shop teachers are everything and they make such a world of difference in people's lives. Good teachers in general, but good shop teachers, I feel like particularly, just play such an important role in people's lives and can change the trajectory, not just of their career, but of their lives and their self-esteem and their self-worth. And you may never know and you may never get thanked, but like, I'm a thank you on tradespeople's behalf. Like,
well, thank you.
That's
really you.
Even if you get sometimes those, all it takes is one moment, one student, you know, whether if it's 1 in 5 years or whatever, you know, there might be depending on how the kids are coming up, but just one even moment or experience, you're like, oh,
makes it all worth
it, right? You know, like you kind of got to go through the trenches sometimes, and but you got to look at the positive side. And if we can influence even their high school experience, whether they go in the trades or not, they've got a comfortable environment that they can come in and be themselves and, you know, try without being reprimanded and knowing it's okay to make mistakes. And I think for me, that's the big thing is trying to set that up. But sometimes easier said than done.
I love it.
What has been, you know, in your teaching experience, what has been a moment like that that you've experienced? Like a real, like, this is why I do this. This is a rare thing. I need to enjoy this moment, but this is going to fuel me for the next like 3-4 years of, of Lowe's.
I think, so I teach shop stuff in more of a traditional teaching environment, but then I teach through the all-female builds that I do at my shop. So if you're not familiar, just a quick, for anybody listening.
Please. Yeah, let us know.
So I have a shop in Phoenix called Girl Gang Garage, and I coordinate and organize these large all-female builds where women come from all over the country. Some of them are tradeswomen, some of them are novices or hobbyists who maybe have
little
to no experience. And we take a car from bare metal and we build it into a high-end SEMA show car. And we've taken on some pretty ridiculous projects, but we've had women from all over the country, from Canada as well, come out and participate, and from all different skill levels, from literally, I don't know what a ratchet is, to I have 30 years of experience working with metal or whatever it is, ranging in age from 8 years old to mid 70s.
Wow.
So I've had a lot of like non-traditional teaching in that space because there's, it's constantly, and we're learning as we go too. Like I've taken on projects in these builds that I had never done before. So I'm figuring it out and then teaching it. And, but I've always said that like the biggest impact from these builds isn't about the build itself. It's really about just the connection and the community and the ladies coming together and having an opportunity to work with one another and, to have faith, have people have faith in them, if that makes sense. Like I had a woman tell me that it was coming out here to work on the build was the first time that she had ever, it had ever been just assumed that she knew what she was doing and that she was competent and capable.
Wow.
And it felt so foreign to her to just have somebody just assume she was capable and not question her. And that was such a pivotal moment for her. So I've been really fortunate because I teach in these weird micro bursts. I'll have someone come out for like 3 or 4 days and then they're gone. And it's always more women, new people coming in. So I've been very fortunate to have lots of those beautiful moments where like I get to have my cup filled and be like, oh, yay, this is why I do this. This is why I get up. This is why I put myself through all the heartache and the stress and the financial drain and all of the other things. And because I'm creating a space for people to have these experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily that I'm creating the experience. I'm just creating the space for them to do that.
I think that's a big thing, though, the space where somebody can come in and, like you said, whether they're a newbie, whether they're 30 years experience, people need a space to be able to do this type of work. And if it's set up in the right, if the culture is there, then everybody's, you know, learning from each other, helping each other out. It's kind of like a autopilot where all the good stuff's happening.
Totally. Right? Yeah, it is. I mean, I guess it does come full circle. It is culture. It is. I've created a culture here where it's everybody is welcome, where we don't make fun of you for not knowing, where mistakes are 100% not just okay, but celebrated, because that means we get to learn something new and let's get excited about them. You know, it's a space where what I think should be in the industry is that we encourage people and give them an opportunity and assume that they're capable.
Yeah. That's a, they may mess up. That's a really powerful like testimony or like for her to share that with you. And like, holy, that, oh man, that must have been really empowering, but also kind of saddening for you too. Be like, really?
Like, so many of the stories I've heard are like both make me feel good, but then also are like so sad to me about what they've put up with in the industry. I had another woman that I had, there's so many, like it's hard to say, to pick out just a few, but there's a woman who was involved in the first all-female build and she was going through chemotherapy when she came out to work on the build. And she had spent her life in the automotive industry, but kind of was held back from being a mechanic. So she worked on the parts side. And so she'd faced quite a bit and she was spent her life being the weird car girl. And then she became the weird cancer girl with no hair. And then she came to the shop and she expressed to me that it was the first time in however long that she could remember where she just felt like her, like just a person, not the weird this or the weird that, but she was just her. And later after the build was over, she's in remission. She's good. She's healthy. She's happy. She's amazing. She's doing phenomenally.
Awesome.
But she said, the doctors cured my cancer, but the Chevy Montage, saved my life.
Wow.
And, that was like,
yeah.
Yeah. She sprung that one on me in front of people on stage. And I was just like,
oh my gosh, that is incredible. Wow.
But yeah,
you're doing amazing work.
I'm trying. It doesn't feel, it never feels like enough. It never feels like enough.
Well, but I want to get
another story.
It's a lot. I mean, I'm just saying like from the outside here, like just hearing all this, you're doing incredible work, but I want to know, like, cause you mentioned before when you went into like dealerships or mechanics, you were sick of how you were treated as a woman, trying to seek this stuff out. Is that when your drive for women's rights, started, or has it always been like growing up, you were always like a champion for women's rights?
Yeah. I think it's always, I mean, so my background, my parents are total hippies. I grew up wearing bell bottom corduroys and going to protests in Washington.
There's a
picture of me like this tall wearing literally bell bottom corduroys and a peace sign t-shirt holding a sign that said, "This kid is anti-nuclear."
like, that's awesome.
So I was brought up as like a social justice kind of person. And so, I've always had a thing for women's issues and empowering women. And like I said, I thought I was going to do it in the legal space. And then realized that I could do it in a different way. So like I teach these basic car care classes at the shop, and it's like how to change a tire and how to shake your fluids and like how to talk to a service advisor. And I'm not teaching about cars. Like I am, but I'm not. Like cars are just the vehicle. And I always say that, it's not pun intended. Like it's the way that I'm teaching empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
And that things that you think are scary may not be so scary. And that what else in your life might not be so scary. So I'm teaching empowerment. I'm just using cars to do it.
Of course.
How to talk to a service advisor. That is wonderful.
That is incredible.
Even when I remember when I was young and taking the truck into the shop, and you're like, "Oh, it needs this, this, and this." No idea. You're like, "Oh, okay. I don't know if I can afford this," or, you know, and I just had a motorhome that I had worked on, and they sent me via text, I think it was a service report. So they went through everything. And then there was items that needed work on, and there was pictures. I think there was some upper control arms that had a bit of play. I'm not very mechanically inclined, but there was some videos showing the play. And I was thinking, this is wonderful for somebody that doesn't maybe not know what this jargon means. Now you've got pictures, you've got videos, and you can see this instead of just, "Oh, you need a new engine. Your engine crapped out. It'll be $8,000. Right. You're like, "Oh, sure." And you know, so
this is a professional. They must be,
you know, I think we've made technology.
Right. We've definitely made a lot of progress in that regard. And that's been some of the internal change that's been happening in the automotive spaces. Like if you show them a picture or give them a video or heaven forbid, like get rid of the sign that says no employees past this point and actually, or no, nothing but employees, and actually bring people out into the shop to show them.
Yes.
Like if I show you the clunk, clunk, clunk in your bad ball joint, seeing is believing. Now you understand. Like, and maybe if I explain it to you in layman's term instead of throwing jargon at you.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, "What? I don't know. Sure, do it. Or I can afford it. And you're going to crash on the highway because you didn't spend the $400 or whatever." But
the nomenclature ego, right?
Right.
"Oh, you don't know what that means? Stoichiometric? Come on."
Yeah, your who's a what's it valve, your hopper valve. Like people make up shit, right? Yeah. And that's the stereotype that technicians are taking advantage of you because they're throwing out this technical jargon. It's like, so let's break down the technical jargon and explain things to people. But I tell consumers, I'm like, you just ask. Even if you don't care, ask.
Yeah.
Because if they're not willing to explain it to you, you're not at the right shop. Go somewhere else.
For sure. Yeah. So where did the, I want to know where those two worlds collided. Your like your passion for women's rights and empowerment and cars. But like, so you went to your BMW master mechanic, and then when did you take the one hat, the women's rights hat, and then your master mechanic hat, and we're like, "I'm going to do my own thing. That's enough." Was it like a negative exit, or was it like,
no. So I'm going to be totally honest.
Please,
it was the plan. It was the plan from the get go.
Oh, cool.
I lost sight of it for a little while, and I kind of got stuck in the like 9-to-5 rat race and the flat rate, and kind of got lost in that world for a little bit and lost sight of it. But when I sat down for my senior advising session in college, and my pre-law advisor was like, "Okay, so tell me why you want to go to law school." I stared at him for like 5 minutes and I said, "You know, the truth is I don't." And he's like, "Okay, what do you want to do?" I said, "I want to go become a mechanic and open up this was my idea at the time. I wanted to open up an all-female shop that partnered with a domestic violence center and taught women who were survivors a trade to help them get their lives back on track.
That's incredible.
That was my vision back then. That never quite happened. I didn't partner with a domestic violence shelter, but I do a lot of training and I had an all-female shop. But that was the idea from the get-go. The idea from the get-go was I can combine this love I have of working with my hands with this other thing that really has always driven me. And I think the seed for that started getting planted in college when I was like, I was teaching my friends about their cars because I had taken auto shop in high school. And so silly things, I was helping people change their tires and showing them how to refill their coolant. And so many kids in college are not ever taught these things. And especially not the girls. And I found a lot of satisfaction in doing that. Like it felt really good. And I loved seeing the empowerment that they got out of actually understanding what coolant was and why they had to keep up on the level. And I think that's where the seeds for it really got planted originally. Yeah, that was always the plan.
That's so cool. Good for you. Look at you getting out there, having a target and achieving that goal.
But I'm like, so the atypical car person, right? Because people are always like, what's your favorite kind of car? And I'm like, I don't really have one.
Yeah, yeah.
I just like fixing them. I'm not that girl who's like reading all the car magazines. I'm not, a car goes down the street and I'm not like, oh, that's a blah, 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 blah. Right? Like I can't tell from the sound of it. But I can be like, oh, that one has a misfire.
Yeah.
That needs some work. Yeah. Here's a quote.
Right. Like, I don't know what engine size the car came in. I don't know like what stock factory horsepower ratings. I don't know. I don't care. Is it broken? Can I fix it? I am totally not a stereotypical car person in that sense.
That's refreshing.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's something. I don't know. Because I get made fun of
for
it.
I think people fill their lack of knowledge with like useless facts.
That is true.
Your like lack of skill knowledge maybe with useless facts. Because even in some of the kids I teach, like they couldn't really change their own oil, but they know that the new McLaren has whatever 800 horse and blah 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 blah, just stuff they've seen. And,
right. You know,
they're just regurgitating a YouTube
brain
video.
For that.
Yeah, that's true.
Some people have a brain for that. It is not the way my brain works. But I remember having a young kid who was apprenticing with me at my shop, and he was always asking me like, "Oh, what's the horsepower on that car? What's the torque specs on that car?" And I'm like, "Roland, no customer is ever gonna come into the shop and be like, I feel like my car is missing about 15 horsepower." Yeah. I'm like, nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
I'll just throw an air intake on that to make the difference up.
Yeah. Right? Like, unless you work in motorsports, that doesn't matter. If you work at a general repair shop keeping John and Jane Doe's car on the road, like, horsepower numbers are not serving you.
Yeah, fair enough.
At all.
So where did the TV show come from? Like, how did you get into that?
Oof.
Aspect.
Yeah. So super random. I was not seeking out TV. It was not like the intent of mine, but
sending out headshots.
I know. Right. No, I did not have an agent. It was nothing like that. But you got to remember, I started my repair shop in 2006, which was before social media like became what it is. And so they had this idea for All Girls Garage pitched to the network as a show, and they didn't want model or actors. They wanted real, see, there go the automatic lights. So they didn't want models or actors or anything like that. They wanted actual women who work on cars. And at the time you couldn't just search hashtag female mechanic. But because I had a mostly female shop and I had some local news articles written about me, and then some national news coverage had happened, so they were able to find me through the news articles. And they reached out through that. And at first I told them no.
How come?
Excuse me. I had actually been approached by like five or six other production companies prior to that. And all of the other production companies, they wanted the drama. They wanted the like, you know, we're gonna put seven women living in a house together.
Let's
They're
watch.
Gonna open up a shop together. Yeah. And I'm like, you want pillow fights and cat fights, and I'm not doing that.
Oh my gosh.
Because like they all wanted the drama of it, because it was that era of reality TV, right? Throw the tools, yell, like all the stuff.
The like, Tuttles.
Like women have a hard enough time in this industry. I'm not playing that game. I'm
Good
not
for
adding
you.
To that.
Good for you.
For staying with your roots.
Because that could probably be tempting for anybody. Like, Oh, TV show. I don't know.
Right? But not
and
like
good for you for not compromising. That's really cool.
Thank you. I was, I wanted nothing to do with it. So then when my production company reached out and they had this show, I was like, no, not interested. And they're like, just check out our other shows. We're education-based. We're not drama. This is like more like for DIY and hobbyists and like actually how-to type stuff. And I checked out one of their videos from one of their shows. And the first one I stumbled on was Kevin Bird from Two Guys. Was it Two Guys? Yeah, from Two Guys. And he was explaining velocity of air through the intake manifold with like a whiteboard, and he was drawing, and I was like, oh, this is education based. I'm totally okay, cool. So then I went out for an audition.
That's cool.
How has that journey been for 12 years? That must be,
it's been crazy. I can't believe it's been 12 years. Like, I literally feel like I blinked my eyes and here we are. It's not the path that I expected for my life. Like I said, I didn't seek this out. It is definitely different. I've sold my shop to focus on all the other stuff that I do. And, you know, sometimes I miss it. I miss my shop sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it definitely changed the trajectory of my life, in some in good ways and some in challenging ways. But I love it. I'm grateful for it. I think the power of visibility is huge. And I love when I get those moments when like I get a message from a grandpa that's like, my granddaughter will work on cars with me in the garage now after seeing you on TV.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like that's the stuff that I'm like, oh, okay, that's why I do it. Right.
That's gotta be almost like that teacher role, somebody who's like, hey, because of you, my daughter, granddaughter, or my spouse, or I am doing this because I'm watching you and you've given me the confidence and you've taught me how to do this. That's gonna be like a pat.
Yeah, because
on the back,
I saw you do it. I saw somebody who looks like me doing it. Yep. That gave me the courage to do it myself, right? And I love how so many of our topics in this whole windy conversation have like circled back to each other. Like it's all the same. It's all the same thing, right?
Yeah. And it's all relevant. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you? You mentioned just briefly, like I don't know, the word motorsports came into our conversation quickly and it left. Have you ever dabbled? Have you ever thought about that? Has that ever been something you'd want?
I have a ton of respect for people who do it. It's just not my thing. It's never really like piqued my interest. I don't dislike it. I almost said unlike it. I don't unlike it either.
But
I don't dislike it.
Social media talk.
I was right there with you. I was like, oh, she doesn't unlike it. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. That's right there. Yeah.
That's where my brain's at.
I didn't unsubscribe. Yeah, I just, I
dissubscribed. Yeah, yeah.
Right. It's just never really been my thing.
Yeah.
And that's
cool. Yeah. So for someone who wants to get into automotive, as we kind of start wrapping up the episode, someone who wants to get into the automotive industry, what's some general advice you'd give them?
I think the most important things are to stay curious and to stay humble, especially when you're first entering the field. Like, know that you have to work your way up and you have to kind of earn your stripes. Like, nobody starts out as the lead diagnostician, right? You start in at the entry level. But if you stay curious and you show that you're eager, like you will rise in the ranks quickly. And like the be curious is always, because there's always new technology. There's always things changing. Like, always be questioning how things work, how things go together, how things come apart. Like, keep that curiosity fresh in your mind and don't lose sight of that.
I love that.
I think that's good life advice. Yeah. Be curious, right? Like you get stagnant. People so much, like I can get stagnant and stuff too, but keep that curiosity and that mindset. Smack. I mean, especially with the way the world's evolving with technology and probably even with automotive, if you look at, you know, 10, 15 years ago to now with all the scanners and I'm
so
just throwing jargon out.
Diagnostic equipment.
Right, there we go.
Yeah, yeah.
But throwing out words he thinks he's heard.
Somebody told
Planer,
me the quote.
Yeah. Sander. Yeah. Okay,
wood,
we're back.
Wood. I think that mindset, that curiosity or that curious mindset is good in life.
Totally.
And I think in the trades too, because there's always, how do you, you know, you take like a parts manual or a specific, you know, the parts breakdown. That's kind of, you know, you got to be curious about stuff.
Absolutely. And like, and that drives you that will naturally lead you and drive you to want to be better because, you know, no matter what trade you're in, like now that I've gotten into welding and metalwork, now everywhere I go, I'm like, ooh, how's that awning put together? Yeah, how is that thing made? Right. And that's going to constantly push you to try new things and be better and hone your skills and just continue to grow.
Mm-hmm. What would some specific skill sets that you'd want to develop getting into the automotive industry?
Curiosity. yeah. I mean, I think that's the skill set too, right? And I'm jokingly saying that, but I'm also dead serious.
No, like, absolutely.
That is the skill set. Want to understand how things come apart. But I am a hypocrite in saying this because I am not good at this, but organization, cleanliness, following logical trains of thought, like the diagnostic process is a very like there's a process to it. And if you get good at following that process, like I've never been good with processes. It's not my thing. I'm chaos brain. I'm like creative minds are rarely tidy. I am definitely that, but I have learned to love processes. And that was a skill that I had to really develop in myself to become a good diagnostician. And then that translated into helping me be a good boss and a good business owner and a good shop owner and a good coach and teacher and like all of those things, because you have to have those processes. So that's a skill set that I would definitely work on building, creating processes and following processes. And then other than that, you know, I think I hate to keep going back to the curiosity thing, but like, it really is like when I went from working at a dealership to working as my own boss and working on all makes and models, you suddenly get faced with like, there's so many different ways of doing the same thing, right? Like you, when you work on one brand, you learn how they do it and you start to kind of anticipate the common problems and all of that. And you can fall on that crutch, I should say, of 99% of the time when this misfire coded, I know that it's this problem and I can just fix that and not be curious about how or why. Mm-hmm. When you start working on all makes and models, it really proved to me I had to go back to the basics of figuring out how things worked. Mm-hmm. Even if I'd never seen the car before, even if I'd never done the job before, that if I went back to basics and I like followed it out logically and figured out how it worked, that I could work on anything. Mm-hmm. If you kind of come at it from that perspective of like, what's connected to what? What's the flow of things? How are things connected? Then suddenly you can work on anything.
Know how to read a flow chart.
Yeah. And be willing to take stuff apart, yeah, and to figure it out and like learn your basics.
Yeah.
Right. Mozart was a great composer, but at some point he had to learn the basics, right? So you start out with the basics, know your basics. If you know your basics inside and out, then you can improvise. Then you can be crazy and wild and you can figure out things and you can invent new things and you can do whatever, but you've got to really understand your basics.
Do you think we're in a place now in, like, I really like what you just said there about learning the basics, but do you think we're in a place now with young people and social media where they're coming in expecting to be able to do all the wild and crazy before they can walk?
Oh, absolutely. But I don't think that's necessarily new.
Yeah.
Everybody wants the glamorous job.
That's fair. Right?
Everybody wants the fun and exciting. Like nobody goes into any career to be the grunt, right? The guy who wants to be the head surgeon did not go into his career wanting.
That's a good point.
To right, it's like we all want to do the big stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes we need a
what floor?
Reminder. Yeah. Right. And sometimes we need that reminder that you have to start out at the bottom of the totem pole, and you have to pay your dues, and you're not going to be the head chef right off the bat. You're going to be the prep cook. And that's the way it is. And nobody starts out at the top. You put in your time and you work your way up. I think there is a little bit more instant gratification in today's society, but it's not just for kids. Adults have that problem too.
Oh, for sure.
The instant, immediate. attention spans of goldfish.
Overhauling started that. No, I'm just kidding. What do you mean?
I think the 5 second commercials on YouTube is what started that, right? Because because after 5 seconds, you can skip the ad. So everything is now you have 5 seconds to grab people's attention. That's the length of our attention span is 5 seconds. If I don't grab your attention in 5 seconds, it's gone, right?
So what would be...
Sorry, tangent. Hey, squirrel.
Yeah. Sorry, you talked for 10 seconds, Hoff. So,
where are we right now? That's funny because we're at a hotel this weekend.
I'm the worst. Sorry.
This is awesome.
My kids were watching 20 minutes of TV before bed, and there was a commercial that came on, and my daughter was like, "Dad, I want to watch the Lego movie." I'm like, "Well, this is a commercial. I don't have time for commercials." Like, no, I just want this. I'm like, this is television.
This is
welcome to my
works.
Life when I was younger.
I have no idea.
If you don't make the time your show starts, you don't get to watch it. Or you get the last 2 minutes. You don't just get to play from beginning.
We had to get up to change the channel.
Yeah. Exactly. There was no remotes. Yeah, Tim the Tool. side tangent there. Squirrel. So top three starting out tools for somebody wanting to get into the automotive industry.
Just a basic set of hand tools. Like, you don't need to get anything crazy fancy. I can't necessarily say any three individual tools, but or maybe I can. Like, have a good quarter inch ratchet, a good 3/8 ratchet, and a basic set of sockets.
Yeah. And a good 1 inch, half inch drive set.
Yeah. And that you'll even use less. Like, a quarter inch and a 3/8 are you're going to use those the most, and a basic set of sockets. But if you just got a basic set of tools, nothing fancy, don't go spending all of your money.
Don't finance
way
it.
Too
Snap-on?
Easy. No, as you get into your career, definitely. I've had several mentors who've told me that if you need to borrow it more than twice, you need to buy it.
Oh, that's cool.
And I think that's fair, right? Mm. So you won't know what kind of tools the manufacturer that you're working on is going to mostly need until you get into it, or what specialty tools or what things. And sometimes, the tool that I like as my go-to ratchet is totally different than what my colleague likes as her go-to ratchet, because we just like different things. So why spend hundreds and hundreds and thousands of dollars only to find out I really like flex head ratchets instead. What I mean?
Yeah.
So don't spend all of your money right off the bat. Wait till you get into the field. Just a basic set of hand tools.
Good advice.
Love it.
Your phone book is your most valuable, not your phone book, but your list of contacts.
What's a phone book?
Yellow
pages?
Your list of contacts on your phone. That is your most valuable tool throughout your career. So network, get to know people, and know that you are never, ever, ever going to know everything. And so knowing people who know things that you don't know, and keeping a good relationship and never burning bridges, that is going to be your most valuable tool. Because I cannot tell you the number of times I come across a problem and I'm like, oh, I know an expert on that, right? Yeah. I know a Volvo tech, I know a VW tech, I know a Nissan tech, I know an expert transmission rebuilder, right? That is your most valuable resource.
I think we call those Rolodexes.
Back in the day, we sure did.
Hey. Got a Rolodex.
Here with this episode.
You don't look old enough to have used a Rolodex. No. That was my generation. You guys are youngins.
I'm
you have to think about it.
I'm 37.
Okay, you're older than you look, but still younger than me.
Okay. Appreciate that. The first part.
Yeah. We'll take that compliment. Hey?
Yeah. Sure. Do you have any personal projects going on? What do you drive, or not necessarily your daily, but is there something that you got, an old Mustang in the back that you want to get done, or you want to?
I drive a BMW 335 because I work for BMW for forever, so they're my they're just easy for me. I do enjoy them; they're great cars to drive. Once you get used to driving a BMW, you don't want to drive anything else. At the shop, we are still working on finishing up our most recent all-female build that went to SEMA last year. She got hurt in transport, and we've been having to fix her up and finish up some things on her. But keep your eye out, because she's going to be on an episode of All Girls Garage soon. So,
oh, sweet. I got the Motor Trend Plus. I got the Motor Trend Plus.
Nice. So I actually have four ladies at the shop right now. I'm at the shop right now, but they're out working on some stuff. And once we're done with this, I'm going to go dive back into work. And then I have a graveyard full of cars that are waiting for me to work on them. Oh, I have like seven dead cars waiting for me to work on them, because I am a horrible car mom.
Can you share what they are?
I have an E36 BMW convertible, which is like early 90s. I have a E39 BMW wagon, a 1964 Nash Metropolitan.
Sweet.
A Suzuki Carry, which is a little right-hand drive, little mini utility pickup truck thing.
Oh, like one of those K trucks?
Yeah, but the Suzuki version.
Yeah.
And then I have my first car, my Volkswagen Bug.
Oh, you still have it?
I do.
Cool.
I have two motorcycles, a Honda Hawk and a Triumph Street Triple. And I think that's it.
Cool.
I think.
What a collection.
Wow.
And I love how diverse it is. That's the coolest part. At first,
it's
I was like,
random.
Okay, E36, got the wagon. I was like, are they going to all be Beamers? And then you're like, oh, Nash Metropolitan. I was like, oh, this is great.
So the Beamers are cars that I would like buy off customers who didn't want to fix them.
Oh, okay.
Because I would be like, oh, well, I can fix them easily. But then I never got around to it. So now they need more work because cars die of boredom. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones are, I really like little cars. I like little,
they're like
small
toys.
Cute. Yes. Like, that's why I love the Volkswagen Bug, because it's little and cute.
That's what Jerry Seinfeld says. He's like, I like small cars because they're like toys.
They are. And they're so fun. And you can fit more of them in one space. So I can have a smaller shop.
And still have eight cars on the floor.
Yes.
Perfect. That's like, talk about following the logic. That's following the logic.
Yeah.
Bring it on back. Hey. Love it.
I love it.
So what's next for you?
Oof. I don't know.
Cool.
I don't know, man. I mean, I've got all sorts of stuff going on at Girl Gang Garage, at the shop, and with working with various corporate partners, and there's all sorts of stuff always happening. But you know, I learned a long time ago, you know, how many times did I say, like, if I had known what I was going to be doing at this point, like, I would have laughed at you, right?
Yeah.
So I'd given up on trying to anticipate what my life is going to look like in 5 years, because who the heck knows?
Yeah.
Sounds like it's been a fun journey, though.
It's been an adventure.
Just let it ride.
It's been an adventure. Yeah. Well, so your guess is as good as mine.
Bogey, thank you so much for taking time today.
Absolutely.
You're very busy, but it means a lot that you took time to talk to us,
pleasure.
To share
this
more
was
of
fun.
Your story. I'm glad you had a good time. Where can people find you as we wrap up the show? Can you tell people where
they
can find you?
So social media, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, although not as much because I'm not as good at that one, as Bogey's Garage. And then the podcast you can listen to anywhere you get podcasts, or we go live on YouTube every Wednesday night on the channel is called With Her Two Hands. So it's all about celebrating the women who build, fix, and make things with their own two hands. And so you
I love
find
it.
That there.
We'll put all the links to all your socials and everything in the show notes of this episode too. But
so
Bogey, thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate
your
time.
Appreciate you.
Thank you for everyone for listening. And again, all of everything we talked about will be in the description or in the show notes of this episode. Thanks, Hoff, for being here.
Thanks, Rosie.
And we'll catch everyone in the next one.